Hey, good evening, Two Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this Friday evening. A quick program note. I will be off Monday coming, but the good news is Sam Cedar will be guest hosting that evening, so you won't miss me a bit. All right, Sam Cedar this Monday on the Malloy program. How about the Senate Democrats this week? I keep having to remind myself that they... They're supposed to be the majority party. I guess that's not true, though, is it? Because of Lieberman and Cheney. Lieberman screws everything up, and we have some more on him a little bit later in the program here. But between Lieberman and Cheney, the Democrats may have a what appears to be a numerical superiority, but they really don't, right? Huh? But anyway, talk about a bad week for Democrats. The tasering at the Kerry event, the MoveOn.org ad... resolution in the the Senate. Two Iraqi troop withdrawal bills defeated. Senator Webb's plan to mandate as much home time as combat time for our battered troops down the crapper, thanks to the Republicans. Wow, what a majority! Huh? And the Republicans just keep rolling along. Did you see this? It was in Wednesday's post. It just blew right past me. The leading contenders for the Republican nomination have indicated they will not attend the All-American Presidential Forum, organized by black talk show host Tavis Smiley, scheduled for September 27th at Morgan State University in Baltimore, and airing on the public broadcast network. Giuliani, Romney, Fred Thompson, McCain, they all said they had scheduling conflicts, so they couldn't make it. Now, the Democrats, of course, attended a similar event in June at Howard University. Jack Kemp, is he still around? Oh, my God. Way back in 96, who was the guy that did the... The Viagra ads, the former senator. Who was that, Kathy?
How about Bob Dole?
Bob Dole, thank you.
Poor Liddy. I bet she still has those pen marks on her back.
I'll bet she does, too. Yeah, that's right. I could have said Liddy Dole's husband. She's still a senator. Can you believe that?
Are you sure?
I'm sure. But anyway, Jack Kemp, who was Dole's running mate in 96, was... seems a little bit chagrined that all the Republicans are going to skip anything having to do with African Americans, anything that has to do with Latino Americans. The Republicans are just not going to go there. They're not going to go there. They write off what amounts to about 30%, maybe more, maybe 35 or 40% total of the voting public. They just write it off. And on the other hand, you hear Bush talking about wanting to build inroads to the Republican Party into the Latino community. Black folks know. I mean, ever since Lincoln, there's no reason to even walk within smelling distance of a white Republican. As far as black Republicans, that's like a black that's like log cabin Republicans. You know, the same as a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. It's insane. But anyway, Jack Kemp said, "We sound like we don't want immigrants. We sound like we don't want black people to vote for us. What are we going to do? Meet in a country club in the suburbs one day?" You sound like Jack? Come on, you've been a Republican all your life. You know what Republicans are. They are racist, they're warmongers, they're liars, killers, brain dead, most of them some far out fundamentalist brand of religion, either Christianity or Judaism. They're crazy people, and Kemp, you know this. You're one of them. Sit down, shut up. Now, according to the Post, making matters worse, some Republicans believe is that the decision to bypass the Morgan State Forum comes after all the Republican candidates except McCain declined invitations this month to debate on Univision, the most watched Hispanic television network in the U.S., and that event was eventually postponed. Oh, my God. And Newt Gingrich, who, you know, the megalomaniac, completely self-referential former Speaker of the House from here in Georgia, Newt Gingrich, who was Sean Hannity's mentor. Sean did everything for Newt except, well, maybe he did that too. And that's how Sean got where he is. But here in Georgia, trust me, we all watched it down here. Even Bortz hated it. But anyway, Newt Gingrich said, for Republicans to consistently refuse to engage in front of an African-American or Latino audience is an enormous error. Oh, really, Newt? But Newt, it was your word list. You're the one who set this up back in the mid-90s. Come on, Newt, you hypocritical little creep. This is a result of your Republican Party, dude. Well, you and Reagan. Gingrich went on to say, I see no excuse. This thing has been planned for months. These candidates have known about it for months. It's just fundamentally wrong. Any of them who give you that scheduling conflict answer are disingenuous. That's baloney. Well, you almost had me there, Newt, except instead of saying disingenuous, you should have said it's a goddamn lie. But and you cuss. Come on, Newt. We know about you. We know what you do. Not only do you cuss, you leave your wives like most people leave soiled tissues as they walk through a shopping mall. You're a freak. You know you're a freak. You while you were busting up on Clinton and Monica, you had your own little honey who was on the payroll of a Department of Agriculture subcommittee. You have been witnessed doing oral sex out in the parking lot of the House. Come on, Newt. Back off, you hypocritical chump. Oh, I hate these people. Oh, I hate these people. In passing on these invitations to the Morgan State University Forum, by the way, the Republicans said they had hectic schedules. So a question, when you reject every black invitation and every brown invitation you receive, is that a scheduling issue or is it a pattern? Right. Oh, my God. People, what difference does it make? And you know the sad part? There probably will be Americans who are gay, Americans of color, Americans in the working class, Americans who depend on some sort of government aid, like Medicaid or what have you, who will actually vote Republican in 08. They will. They will actually do it. They'll say, here, Republican Party, here's my vote. Now, you see this dotted line I drew around the base of my neck all the way around? That's where you chop. Just go ahead. Sick. Who's sicker, the Republicans or the people who vote for them? Well, that's a toss-up. James Risser, writing at Daily Kos, points out something that's astonishing. The Republican Party has successfully filled a Kansas cemetery with the dead from their illegal war and occupation in Iraq. As Risser writes at Daily Kos, this is quite a coup for Senate Republicans who voted for the surge and continue to block opposition to their bloodbath by the opposition party and the people of America. The nearest cemetery to Fort Riley, Kansas, is filled to the gills with dead Americans blown to pieces in the Republican war in Iraq. A spokesman, Allison Kohler, for the Fort Riley U.S. Army Post, home of the 1st Infantry Division, said, quote, we are full. Fort Riley has lost 133 soldiers and airmen. Not all are buried in the Fort Riley Cemetery. Sergeant Joel Murray, who was killed September 4th in Iraq, took the last available plot, said Allison Kohler. Now, Sam Brownback and Pat Roberts, they're the two senators there. They're, as Risser writes, Sam Brownback is one of the party's filthy miscreants currently campaigning to be the Republican Party's murderer-in-chief and loves war and death and votes accordingly. Pat Roberts is an ancient asshat of the Republican War Party, and thanks to his work of actively covering up the activities of the Bush crime family while he chaired the Senate Intelligence Committee, he can be quite proud of doing yeoman's task of filling the cemetery with war dead. Risser writes, these two Republican senators from Kansas, Brownback and Roberts, having not enough blood on their hands, And rather than taking this as an opportunity to rethink American involvement in Iraqi civil war, have decided that a new cemetery is the more appropriate response. Oh, my God. But, as Risser points out, there is some added good news for the Republican death machine regarding dead soldiers in Kansas. I'll have it for you when we come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Yeah, it's going to be one of those nights.
How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless killing spree? How many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice?
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope, an ideology of hate.
You dumb bastard. Oh, my God. Anyway, from that kind of sick humor to the fact that the dead soldiers and airmen returning to Fort Riley in Kansas, their bodies returning there, there's really not any place to bury them. The nearest nearest cemetery is full. So what to do, what to do? And Kansas, of course, in the Senate is represented by two real right-wing killers, both of whom are washed in the blood of Iraqis and washed in the blood of their Jesus. It's just disgusting. It's just utterly disgusting. Brownback and Roberts. Anyway, the cemeteries are full. There's no place to bury returning dead soldiers and airmen. So Roberts and Brownback, both Republicans, of course, yesterday sent a letter to William Turk, the Undersecretary for Memorial Affairs at the Department of Veterans Affairs, urging full funding for a new cemetery at Fort Riley. The old one's full, but good news for the Republicans. And this is in James Risser's diary today at Daily Kos. Good news for the Republicans. Fort Riley, wait for it, Fort Riley can bury bodies on top of other bodies if family members want to share a plot. How about that? So all is not lost. Just open up the graves already closed and slam another one in. And another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. You see, in Kansas, it is permissible to bury dead American soldiers on top of each other. So the Republicans can refill the cemetery again. Should the Republicans in Congress fear that the new cemetery might raise taxes on Republicans living in Kansas? If America continues, Risser writes, to send Republicans to the U.S. Senate instead of sending human beings, the corpses of the dead American soldiers will continue to be returned to the overflowing graveyards, such as the one in Kansas. The choice is for the voters to make. That's awful. That's one of the most gruesome stories, Kathy, I think we've done here. But it is Friday night, and this is when we get a backwash. It's sort of like when your commode backs up or your kitchen sink, and you have to get the plunger out and go to work. That's what Friday's show is like here. We get this backwash of items that are clogging everything up, so we try to plunge it on down, plunge it through. Remember we told you last week or the week before, John David Roy Acheson, he's the federal prosecutor and girls basketball coach in the Florida Panhandle, who thought he was making an appointment with a woman so that he could go have hot sex with her five-year-old daughter, went to Detroit, where the meeting was to take place, and he took with him a Dora the Explorer doll and some little children's jewelry. Oh, this son of a bitch. Anyway, he attempted suicide. He got busted. And, you know, married man, three kids, 53 years old. He said he knew how to have sex with a little five-year-old child without hurting her because he'd done it so many times. Well, according to the authorities in where he's being held, he tried to hang himself. Was it last night with a bed sheet? Didn't work, you rat bastard. You're going to have to, until you can do it successfully, you're going to have to face the court and maybe spend a long, long time in prison. On the other hand, guys like you who do go to prison don't stay very long at all, and I'm not talking about parole.
I was about to say, you know, the prison will take care of that for him.
God. You know, I have a granddaughter who just turned six, and a daughter who 2 months ago turned three. And I think about these predators that are out there, like this Republican federal prosecutor, and what have the people who worked around Gonzalez, didn't Alberto, the Attorney General, say that, when he left in disgrace, all the wondrous things he'd done in protecting our children from the pornographers and the online predators, and didn't a spokesperson for the Justice Department say that the only people who worked in that department as prosecutors are people who are loyal Bushies? Well, let's see, 1 + 1 = 2. Uh-huh. So, the guy who went to have sex with a five-year-old little girl is a federal prosecutor, or was a federal prosecutor, because he was a loyal Bushy. Son of a bitch.
'Cause daddy likes porno and $10 whores. Daddy gets wasted and robs liquor stores. Daddy likes rubbing against little boys on the bus. I think that's why your mommy left her.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
It's about 25 before the hour. In a few moments, we are going to switch to Boku phone calls. In Belgium, there is an ad on television promoting a youth network, Plug TV. And the ad promoting this network depicts Jesus in a manner that you would not find on, in this country, an Fox network. Probably not ABC, CBS, or NBC either. But in the ad, Jesus is depicted as a pot-bellied hippie picking up half-naked women in a nightclub. The advertisement is being aired on the country's main TV channel to promote this Plug TV. The Catholic Church there is thoroughly pissed off, says this sort of portrayal of Jesus is disrespectful to believers and it's wrong to use him for advertising. Hold your comments. Plug TV denies that the advertisement is blasphemous. Now, here's what it shows. It shows a long-haired hippie Jesus grooving along as he tries to get into a nightclub and is refused entry by the bouncers. Jesus, at that point, makes the sign of the cross and sweeps aside the bouncers, shrinking them so they are left in his wake as dwarves. And then the film, or the commercial goes on that shows Jesus drinking whiskey at the bar and magically turning two brown-haired frumpy women into blonde babes wearing bikini tops and red horns like devils. Jesus then disappears into a huge limousine with the women, but his attention is distracted by an advertisement for Plug TV before he is recalled by God, who is standing on a cloud wearing a t-shirt with "Number One Dad" written on it. The God figure reprimands Jesus for wanting to watch Plug TV. And the Catholic Church has expressed its disapproval, saying the advertisement is not the same as journalism and should not share the same concerns about freedom of expression. And the church believes this ad crosses the limits of respectability. Plug TV, however, argues that it's not blasphemous and contains a message about a laid-back Jesus addressing youth. What? It's not blasphemous? Well, of course it is. Come on. You know, even a dyed-in-the-wool hardcore atheist like moi can understand that. Of course it's blasphemous. My God. So to speak. Oh, it's not blasphemous. How could you think that? Apparently the United States does not have an exclusive franchise on half-witted asses living in the country. Who would have thought? Of course, Belgium is about to disappear anyway. Yeah, I guess you're aware of that. You know, the French speakers there and the Flemish speakers there. Or is that, what am I talking, about Belgium? Yeah, I'm talking about Belgium. Belgium is a made-up state anyway. It was kind of a buffer zone to keep the French from going too far north. And where did I read this? I just read this today. Where did I read it, Kathy? I have no idea. But Belgium is about to come apart at the seams. There may be a couple of countries result as the breakup. So it's not just Iraq, you see. Of course, we're not invading. Oh, never mind. Now, last week, I talked a considerable amount about Admiral William Fallon, the head of Central Command, U.S. Central Command. I don't know. Either there's something weird going on, because now all of a sudden Fallon is accusing Iran of supplying roadside bombs to militants in Afghanistan, not Iraq, but Afghanistan. And Fallon is saying the United States would, quote, act decisively, end quote, if this continues. He said Iran's Revolutionary Guard is supplying roadside bomb parts for the type of deadly bombs found in Iraq and known as explosively formed penetrators, EFPs. But he's saying they're doing it in Afghanistan. Fallon told the Associated Press today in a trip to Afghanistan, quote, "The Iranians are clearly supplying some amount of lethal aid. There's no doubt that agents from Iran are involved in aiding the insurgency in Afghanistan." Fallon, and a quote, Fallon said the U.S. was carefully watching the flow of weapons from Iran and said the U.S. would, quote, act decisively, end quote, if the cross-border flow continues. Now, his comments, Fallon's aides said later that those comments were not meant as a threat of military action against Iran, but a suggestion that border interdiction efforts may need to be increased. Iran has denied that it's supplying arms to fighters in Afghanistan. So I don't know. What do you think is going on here? So Fallon, all of a sudden, maybe somebody sent him a email on a back channel and it said, "Hey, you're no better than MoveOn.org." At least MoveOn.org just called him or suggested. You know, there was an article. I'm referring to a part of speech. General Petraeus or General Betray Us. But, you know, that's all they said. And then they went on in the body of the ad, MoveOn.org, to question Petraeus' testimony, because Petraeus is a street whore. No, disrespect to sex workers. And George Bush is the pimp. That's what Bush has done to the military. He's turned some of the top officers in terms of rank, not in terms of ability or combat experience, but the apple polishers, the snot noses who rose to the top by being very subservient to their supervisors, their superiors, all the way up. And Petraeus defines that. He defines it. But MoveOn.org didn't call him an ass-kicking, what was the other part of it? Oh, yeah, chicken excrement. According to sources, it was Fallon. Now, why aren't the Republicans got their snot in the wad over that? Huh? Come on, boys and girls on the right. MoveOn is just relishing in your attention. My God, what did they collect? $500,000 in one day and all kinds of new members. Keep it up, you dumbasses. But why not go after Fallon, who really laid this guy low with his comments? So anyway, word must have gotten to Fallon. Ease up on that, all right? We all know what he is. Of course he's an ass-kicking, chicken-dropping punk. Of course Petraeus is that. Ass-kissing, not ass-kicking. Of course he is. That must have been the word in the back channel email. Wouldn't you love to get that email? Of course that's what he is. Everything you say about him is true. But my God, he's pimping for the president. Leave him alone. Or he's whoring for the... That's right. Bush is the pimp. This guy's the whore. No offense to sex workers. So the word must have got out. So Fallon now is, oh, okay, well, quick. Let me make a tour of Afghanistan. All right. Here I am in Afghanistan. Let me see here. The Iranians are sending stuff to Afghanistan. Better stop. What does he mean by that? Well, nothing really, but I had to say something. I still think he's an ass-kissing chicken dropping. It's insane what Bush has done and Rumsfeld has done to the United States military. Reduced the top ranks of the people who understand war and its awful implications. Let rise to the top the same kind of material that floats in your commode if you don't flush properly. And there they all sit. And there's Bush, acting like, hey, mission accomplished. Hey, all right, gonna shoot him. Gonna kill him. I just gotta play this right. I gotta play it right so that, maybe over the next couple of months I can get some of these other candidates to see it my way. Gotta play it. What? Cemetery out in Kansas filled up? Out of hell with that cemetery. Build another one. And no one, I got this from somebody, Lieberman has done something. Lieberman, along with a Republican, John Kyle of Arizona, did something very sneaky the other day where it concerns the fiscal year 2008 defense authorization bill. And they added an amendment. Well, actually a resolution. Well, actually, amendment, but what it is a sense of the Senate resolution, which means it has no legal force. But as the Congressional Research Service would tell you, quote, foreign governments pay close attention to these sorts of resolutions as evidence of shifts in U.S. foreign policy priorities. Now, what do you think the resolution is about? It's an authorization to attack Iran. Yeah. The resolution said it should be the policy of the U.S. to combat, contain, and roll back the violent activities and destabilizing influence inside Iraq of the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I mean, aren't we the ones doing violent activities and destabilizing influences, huh? It also says to support the prudent and calibrated use of all instruments of the United States national power in Iraq, including diplomatic, economic, intelligence, and military instruments, in support of the policy described in paragraph 3 with respect to the government of Iran and its proxies. So, now, normally this would just be yawn ho-hum, but if something like this passes both the House and the Senate, couldn't Bush then legitimately argue that between it and the War Powers Act and the 2001 and 2002 authorizations to use military force, he has all the authority he needs to attack Iran? Lieberman.
This is Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
It's about 10 before the hour. Your phone calls when we come back after the break at the top of the hour. Just one more thing. Other than mentioning the demonstrations in Gina, Louisiana, I don't think we got too far. Well, we did kind of lay out the bare bones particulars of that case, the Gina 6. The one young man who was still in jail was remanded back to jail today. No bond. O.J. Simpson is charged with 10 felonies, and he gets bond. This kid was involved in what amounts to a street fight, a schoolyard fight, a brutal one. Yes, yes indeed, brutal fight. But he's held without bond, even though two courts have ordered his release. Although there's no racism in this country, especially not in the South. But where have you heard about this one? From about this woman, Megan Williams, in West Virginia? The woman who was held hostage for how long? A week or longer? I'm going to be using the N-word here because I'm quoting a news piece, so if the N-word freaks you out, you might want to just not listen. But her name is Megan Williams. She was tortured, raped, tied up in a shed by six white people. Her mother said every time they stabbed her, they called her nigger. Carmen Williams, the mom, wants people to know what happened to her daughter. So she agreed to talk to a reporter from her daughter's room at Charleston Area Medical Center General Hospital. She said a man and woman who the 20-year-old thought was her friends took her to a house in Peck's Mill, Logan County, West Virginia. She was in a house for about a week, held there. She was beaten, stabbed, choked, sexually assaulted, threatened with death. The details are even more horrible. According to the complaint, she was forced to eat dog and rat feces to lick up blood. She was made to lick part of Frankie Lee Brewster, that's a woman, part of her body under the threat of death. Her hair was pulled out. She was made to drink from the toilet. She was sexually assaulted while hot water was poured on her body and while a man held a knife to her. A woman allegedly cut Megan Williams' ankle and said, "That's what we do to niggers around here." Six people have been charged, including Brewster, the 49-year-old woman who owns the house where the alleged assault happened. Her son, 24-year-old son, is charged with kidnapping, sexual assault, malicious wounding, and assault during the commission of a felony. Mama is charged with sexual assault, kidnapping, malicious wounding, and giving false statements to an officer. Danny Combs, 20, charged with sexual assault, malicious wounding. George Messer, age 27, charged with assault during the commission of a felony and battery. Karen Burton, 46, is charged with malicious wounding, battery, and assault during the commission of a felony. Her daughter, Alicia Burton, is charged with 23, is charged with assault during the commission of a felony and battery. Each was being held on $100,000 bail. The mother says she has barely left her daughter's side since police found her last Saturday. She wakes up in the middle of the night screaming, "Mommy," the mother said. "What's really bad is that we don't know everything they did to her. She's crying all the time." She said her daughter has been a little better since she learned that the people who hurt her have been arrested. The FBI has been called in to investigate the incident as a hate crime. All six of the people charged are white. And the story goes on. It's you know, when I first saw the story, I thought, no, it can't be. And then they had the pictures, the mug shots of these six white people. Jesus Christ, you talk about a posse out of hell. Just, I mean, I don't know. You wonder what kind of animals copulate to produce white people who look like this. I'm serious. Horrifying. These six people, there was their picture for their, it's all over the internet. I'm sure you're familiar with this story. The point of the story is, you know, 20,000, 30,000 people show up to demonstrate, which they should, in Gina, Louisiana, and the media is all over it. No demonstrations in this little jerk-ass town in West Virginia. No offense to West Virginians. Maybe it's not a jerk-ass town. My bad. But you have six people charged with the sorts of felonies that usually put you away for 30 years, 40 years. And hardly a peep. Hardly a peep. I wonder if they would have dragged the 20-year-old behind a pickup truck until her body came apart in pieces and chunks, if that would have gotten mainstream media's attention to a greater degree. Good God. And seriously, if you've seen the pictures of the six people charged, their mugshots, and you look at these scaggly-faced, I swear to God, they all look like that movie from characters in that movie from back in the, was it the late 50s, early 60s, Dawn of the Dead? Was that it, Kathy? The original Dawn of the Dead? You remember that movie? The zombies, the flesh eaters, that's what these six people look like, and apparently they were close to it. What? This is the part I can't get my mind around. What must go through the mind of someone who is being tortured the way this young woman was by six people? Setting aside for a moment the racial difference between the victim and the perpetrators. Just the whole overall thing. It kind of makes me wonder what detainees think when they're being waterboarded in our secret prisons. And they know they're going to die any second. But back to this young woman in West Virginia. What happens to her mind then when she has to deal with the fact that her tormentors, her torturers are white, and apparently the only reason they are doing this to her is because she's black? See, I can't get too far into those kinds of thoughts because my mind starts to spin. Not my brain, not my head, but my mind. It starts going round and round and round and round and round and round in circles. And it gets real dangerous in there. And that's why I've said many times, had I been born of African descent, African American, long ago, I would have been dead in prison. We're in a mental institution. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's still moi, Mike Malloy. This is still the Nova M Radio Network. Once again, program note, I'll be off Monday night. Sam Cedar will be sitting in for me, so enjoy. I just wonder, before we go to your phone calls here, I just wonder if incidents like the Republican presidential nominees giving the middle finger to Tavis Smiley and his attempt to organize for public television and for the information and edification of listeners to his program and Americans in general. In front of the predominantly, I'm sure it would have been predominantly black audience, the Republican candidates, and they all tell Tavis Smiley in their cute little ways, "Well, I'm real busy." They say to Tavis Smiley, "No, we don't appear in front of Negroes, sorry." And when Univision, when Latinos or Spanish speakers try to organize a Republican forum for the edification of their viewers and the rest of America, and the Republicans, other than severely psychologically injured John McCain, they all say, "Sorry, we have other things. Sorry, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye." And that's now. And if you go back to a few years back when Ronald Reagan announced his candidacy for the presidency and went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, where three civil rights workers, two white and one black, were brutally butchered and buried in an earthen dam. When you consider all of that, and I'm not going to bore you with 30 years, going or 37, almost 40 years, just since 1980. Yeah, 27, almost 30 years. I'm not going to bore you with it. Of all the incidences where Republicans have very subtly, with their coded messages and attitudes, made it clear to America that it's okay to beat up gay folk, to torture black folk, to demean and condemn brown folk. Meanwhile, the Democrats, as cowardly as they are in the House and the Senate, the Democratic Party tries again and again and again and again to be inclusive, to open their doors to people. How those people are identified is not the Democratic Party's interest. They just want people, come on home. Come here. Let's do this right. You know, we are, if we're not a melting pot, we're a stew, or we should be. The Republicans, on the other hand, just constantly demean folks who are not white, not conservative, and not Christian fanatics. Constantly. It never stops. And I've often wondered to what extent that attitude perpetuates race hatred in this country. This murderous, you know, where you can torture. And at the same time, you have a Republican administration whose point man on this issue is Latino, Gonzalez, and they legitimize torture. They make it okay. It's okay. It's okay if we do it. Well, national security's at stake here. You know, you can't take a black woman into a house in West Virginia and torture her. Oh, God, whatever gave you that idea? We do it because, well, we do it. You know, we're trying to save you. That's why we torture. You're not supposed to know about it anyway. So that, you know, the upper reaches of the white fanatical, religiously delusional Republican Party that has been so instrumental in just utterly destroying this country since 1994, when they finally somehow convinced a majority of Americans to vote them back into the legislative branch, back into office. You learned a lesson, America? Huh? How soon are you going to do that again, America? Huh? How's that working out? How's that old contract with America working out there, America? Huh? How you feel today? And then Newt Gingrich has the unmitigated gall to lecture his lily-white, pasty-faced brethren about not appearing before black folk and brown folk with their stupid-ass little toy presidential debates. Isn't it madness? Isn't it just madness? It's like a merry-go-round. Round and round and round, the same old, same old. And America, just for some reason, maybe we've learned our lesson now, huh? But for some reason, kept returning these brain-dead killers, thugs, racists, pigs, just back into office. How can the state of Kansas have two people like Brownback and Pat Roberts as their senators? How does that happen? I've been to Kansas. They're not all knuckle-dragging, drooling, booger-eating freaks. Although sending people like these two clowns to the Senate would indicate that they are knuckle-dragging, snot-nosed, booger-eating, drooling freaks, wouldn't it? I mean, that's what it would seem to be. But I've actually stood on the streets in Kansas City, Kansas. I've been at Independence, Kansas. I've been all over Kansas. And they just look like normal people. But to answer my own question, to what extent does homophobia and race hatred and all this other stuff owe its genesis to Republicans. To what extent? In these times, probably 99.9%. Republicans are haters. They're dividers. They're anti-life. Anybody's life. Except theirs. They're pro-death. Anybody's death. Except theirs. They want things to go back to the old days. I mean the 11th century. 12th century. Where you had the lords, you had the nobility, and you had the priesthood, and then you had the serfs. And that's the way it should be to these people. It's pure capitalism. That's what they want. And for some reason, we Americans just, well, up until now, keep returning to office. Maybe it's because we have come to some hideously appropriate? Wrong? Conclusion? That the Democrats are just as bad. But they're not. The Democratic Party has in its upper ranks right now some people with whom you and I vehemently disagree. But the Democrats and the Republicans are not the same. There are some. I'm not a naive fool. Don't send me emails. Don't lecture me. Don't get patronizing with me. Please don't, okay? I understand that certain Democrats are carbon copies of Republicans. But there are also Democrats, the ones who are keeping the spirit of the Democratic Party alive, who are not just like Republicans, and will commit political suicide before they ever would become like Republicans. So, don't write off the Democratic Party. You don't hear me write off the Democratic Party. You hear me writing off Democrats. Oh, okay. Okay, I've said, oh, what's happened to the Democratic Party? I'm not referring to its standards and ideals. I'm referring to some of the people who somehow have gotten into positions of influence and leadership within the Democratic Party. But Democrats are not like Republicans. Republicans are scum. Anti-family, anti-life, pro-death, pro-misery, pro-ruling class, and everybody else is a serf. Anti-military, anti-fiscal responsibility, they're a train wreck. And when they say, well, our scheduling won't permit us to attend Tavis Smiley's debate, they are saying to the mouth breathers in some place like here in Atlanta or rural Georgia or West Virginia, well, if you do find a 20-year-old black woman that you want to torture and make her eat dog feces, well, you know, it's a free country. Past the hour, Edie did it. You can do it. Just go to Google and type in West Virginia and torture and take a look at these fine examples of Caucasianism when their mugshots pop up. And imagine if the 20-year-old woman who was tortured and all the horrible things that were done to her by the six whites, imagine if it would have been six black folk. Yeah, good. You're getting the image in your head. Six black folk and a white woman. 20-year-old white woman. Let that percolate for a second. What do you think would have, how do you think this story would have played in the collective consciousness of this country had the race of the perps and the victim been reversed? Ooh, pretty scary, huh? Okay, let's do some phone calls. The torture has been, from this program, has been long enough without any input from you folks. So let's go to Lonnie, who is calling from Mesa, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Lonnie.
Hi. I wanted to tell you, my uncle, an Air Force veteran, a Vietnam veteran, died in March and was buried in Boulder, Nevada, which is the city next to Las Vegas, in a veteran's cemetery. Mm-hmm. And there were already people buried, husband and wife, on top of each other. And my aunt will be buried on top of him. My sister's father-in-law died in January of this year, my uncle in March of this year. His wife predeceased him, and he was buried on top of her. So that's in Phoenix and in the little town outside of Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already doing that in veteran cemeteries all over the place.
I don't know the circumstances of those instances you just cited.
It's just the way they do it.
Maybe the people now dead requested that.
I know that my aunt did not, and because she's living, I can talk to her. She did not request it. She was told that was how it would be.
Well, not that it matters, because as far as I'm concerned, a corpse really is the shell of what used to be a human being. Not that it matters, but at least from what you're telling me, those people were related either by marriage, marriage. Whereas the military situation in Kansas at this fort and this cemetery near the fort, these are obviously not these are not brothers.
They were unrelated.
Soldiers who are coming home. I think what the law in Kansas is what you're referring to in Nevada, and that is it is legal to bury people on top of each other.
But I will tell you that there are fresh graves there, lots of them. They're not all the old veterans. You know, all I'm saying is you see the number of graves growing in the veteran cemeteries. Absolutely. I've been in two of them this year. And
it's so strange when you think if those graves are being occupied, that's the wrong word, by the remains of young soldiers who have died in Iraq and Afghanistan, how weird and sad and screwy it is, because most Americans, unless they have a relative in this fight, are not aware. None of us. I've not changed my life one bit. We're at war with two countries, and I've not changed my life, nor have 98% of Americans changed their life one bit.
And how do you that it would have an impact?
Say again?
The continual question, how do you change your life? And in some ways, haven't you? I know in some ways I have. But I know it's not like when I was a child and Vietnam was on TV, every station, every night. That's my strongest memory of my childhood is the Vietnam War. You knew. I was 8. I knew a war was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the Bush crime family doesn't want...
You have to seek out.
The Bush crime family doesn't want anyone to know the horrible, hideous details of Bush's wars of choice. Thanks, Lonnie. I appreciate you checking in. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from the Catskills in New York, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, AJ.
Hey, Hanson, how you doing tonight?
How'd it go with you and the missus when you when we last heard from you? You're on your way to D.C.
Well, before I get to that, I want to tell you I'm very sad tonight. I found out last night, to my horror, along with the rest of the country, that the Mandelas are dead.
Oh no. Oh, my God. Listen, let me put you on hold for a second while we do commercials and let that sink in, because Bush Bush let us know that Mandela is dead and all the Mandelas are dead thanks to not Botha, not Reagan, not Kissinger, but thanks to Saddam.
Too shocking to see. Trouble, oh, trouble move from me. I have paid my debt, now won't you leave me in my misery? Trouble, oh, trouble, please be kind. I don't want no fight.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with AJ, the Music Factory, who has called in from the Catskills. All right. Other than the fact that Mandela is dead, somebody better call him up and tell him.
Well, Liza was wondering whether maybe he was talking about the great Mandela, you know, the one that Peter, Paul, and Mary were talking about.
Bush?
Yeah. You know, it really is like having an incontinent uncle at Thanksgiving dinner, isn't it?
Oh, my God. And you know what is so odd? I had one of those. Bless his heart, he's dead now. But it was...
Sorry to conjure the memories.
Yeah, he was the third one born. My grandparents had five kids, and somehow he got the name Calvin. Everybody else was
perfect.
Victorio, Sylvia, Carnella, Layla, and then there was Calvin. And Calvin was I loved him to death. He was totally a total whack job. I mean, he was just out of his mind. I guess had he ever been diagnosed, it would have been schizophrenia, but he, you know, he became a religious nut, and he worked in my grandfather's tire store, and he was happy as a mudlark. There were 13 of us grandkids, and we used to cluster around Calvin, and sometimes we'd antagonize him until Grandma would say, "You know that Calvin's not right. Why are you doing this?" So we had that crazed uncle, and I loved him to death. You know, when I wasn't being a real little bastard to him, I loved him to death.
Well, Calvin lives, I think.
Calvin lives. Yeah, he lives in the Malloy program for sure.
To answer your question, we went down to Washington last week, and the march was great, as probably would be expected. Mm-hmm. There was one thing I found a little bit dismaying, and that was that the organizers of, I mean, if you think about what this was, you know, this horrible war. Everybody goes to Washington D.C., the capital, and marches down Pennsylvania Avenue. And this is playing the palace in speech terms, in
right.
political speech terms.
Right.
And there were some awfully long-winded and boring speakers. And I found it a little bit dismaying that the organizers of such a large event fall into the same traps that organizers of small events do. I mean, if we attended an event like that around here in the mountains of New York, and speakers were kind of wanting, well, then you'd say, okay, well, what do you expect? But it was kind of a mixed bag, and it finally got to the point where there was one guy who got up there and decided to do some slam poetry on the topic, and at about the 64th or 65th verse, the crowd started to go march. March,
right?
March, because
right.
That's what they came to do. And this guy was just—it was. You know, Democrats don't seem to understand that when you do something like that, it's a show. You have to hold people's attention. It being a show doesn't mean it has to be disingenuous,
right?
But they just, you know. Now that said, it was a wonderful experience. I was glad I was there. It was my first time for me, and then Liza's been to several.
Right.
And there was a die-in, of course, and it was probably the first time in my life that I actually respected soldiers. They did the right thing, and they came as close to heroism as I've ever seen soldiers do, what I consider to be heroism. And then, of course, it was horrible. After we left, they maced a lot of the people.
160 arrests.
and 160 arrests and so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to leave you tonight without saying something that's on my mind, and I want to just address quickly the 18 Republicans left who are listening to your program and say that you are guilty. You are guilty either by commission or by omission, and that's the one that actually irks me more, because you could be standing up and saying this is wrong. You could be saving your party. You could be saving your country. You could be saving the truth, and you choose to sit there in the name of partisanship and say nothing. And
that's right.
You turn my stomach. You really do.
I hear that.
And so that's on that cheery note, Mike. I thank you for your good work. And you know, there's something I have to investigate quickly before I go. You know, this whole thing about profanity on the airwaves.
Yeah.
I wonder. Does that include all languages? I have to check that out. I wonder if there's some way around this.
Probably somebody who can really, you know, let fly in, Russian or Portuguese could probably get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I should do that. I should go to the bad word glossary or dictionary and figure out some real ugly sounding Japanese words that mean the same as F-U in English.
Yeah, there's a few that I'm just dying to use, except I want to make absolutely sure that we don't cause any problems before we go there. But
I know let's get an opinion from the Nova M attorneys.
I certainly would like to do that. But by the way, I applaud you for finally kind of coming back to what I consider to be a sensible place on that lately. You've been very expressive, and oh boy, have I enjoyed it.
Well, all right. I hear you. Thanks, AJ. Take care, pal, and have a good weekend. You know what AJ was just talking about the speechifying before the march, and then people start chanting march, march, march. Same thing happened. Remember, Kathy, when we went to the huge demonstration in D.C. before the war, before Bush invaded? That was when what's his name? Oh, God, who is our Bailey's Island Bureau Chief, MATCOM, when Matthew and Will Pitt tried to kill me in the hotel room. You remember that? It's awful. Ben Birch had to step in and save my life, but it was an awful scene. But we had the same experience. There are a couple of national organizations who sponsor or coordinate, not sponsor, but coordinate these marches. And the people who are coming are not, whether rightly or wrongly, they're not there essentially for the issue of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, their occupation. They're not there to free imprisoned prisoners in this country, whether they're noted African-American or noted Native American. That's not why people are there. They're not there to address the injustices perpetrated in this country against older Americans. They are there for one reason. They are there to march against this hideous, filthy occupation and murder spree that Bush has unleashed in the Middle East. And I agree with AJ. That was one of the complaints, one of the major complaints I've always had. The organizers should realize that, you know, if they want a couple of people to get up and speechify, okay, go ahead, keep it focused, maybe two, three at the max, and you know, usually on the platforms around these demonstrations, you just see just scores of people who have all sorts of issues and have prevailed upon the organizers. Well, I just want 3 or 4 minutes to state my cause, because when, again, will I have a chance to talk to 100,000 people? That's a legitimate point of view, and I certainly respect it, but it just kills the demonstration. People are not there to talk about these other issues, even though they are serious, even though they demand attention. They should be getting attention. But if you want attention to free Mumia or Richard Pelletier or work on the Israeli-Palestinian issue or whatever your issue is, then don't bill it as an anti-Iraq war march. Bill it, okay, we're going to get together and talk about freeing people who have been framed by the FBI and are serving long terms in prison. Now, the reason those kinds of events are not presented that way is for the obvious reason, because people would not show up. I'm sorry, you know. I mean, I'm not apologizing for anything. I have nothing to do with it. These are issues we've talked about on the program. We've talked about them over the past 10 years. But it's just, there's something that is a little bit sneaky. When the organizers of these marches allow so many people over such a period of time to get up there and start performing for their particular cause, that's not why the marchers are there. And we did the same thing, didn't we, Kathy? After about the 27th speaker, we all started chanting, "March, march," or "Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go." And it shouldn't come to that. Okay, now, all right, sit back and watch the flood of emails come in and say, "Well, Malloy, you've turned into a reactionary." it never fails to amaze me. What do you got against Mumia? Nothing. We've asked you 30 times to have on somebody from Leonard Pelletier's defense team, and you won't do it. You son of a bitch, you're just like Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry. I just hope you understand what I'm trying to say. That's why the left doesn't really consider me to be left. You know, they consider me to be a liberal. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Our cities are crumbling. Our schools are disgraced. And we're building more jails, putting weapons in space.
Hold on. Hold on. Hold on.
We got to rebuild America. Keep hope alive. Could I do? Remember that unity starts with you.
Hold on. Hold on.
Hold on. Is democracy dead? Only time's gonna tell. Get your feet in the street and start raising some hell.
Hold on.
I thought an interesting comment was made when somebody said to me, I heard somebody say, "Now where's Mandela?" Well, Mandela's dead because Saddam Hussein killed all the Mandelas.
George, you could be a Mandela. Did that ever occur to you without the prison time? You really could. This is from Ron, who's lost in PA, regarding the white people in West Virginia who tortured the 20-year-old black woman. Mike, the quote is from Carmen Williams, the mother. "I don't understand a human being doing another human being the way they did my daughter." Carmen Williams told the Associated Press from her daughter's hospital room, "I didn't know there were people like that out there." And then Ron writes, "I might vomit at any time, for real. Toggling through the images of those insane freaks in West Virginia on the CNN website made me nauseous and confirmed to me there definitely is a subspecies in Homo sapiens, or better, those who haven't evolved beyond the troll." The mother's sentiment above is so understated and composed compared to what I'd do if a pack of jackals like those who tortured her daughter even looked cross-eyed at my son. They wouldn't make it to trial. Hell, I'd pay to have them renditioned to some Slavic funhouse where they could be boiled, hoist on their own petards, while their entrails were fed to snarling dogs. This tragic and I'm not laughing. I'm just like, yeah, that's a good image. This tragic and bizarre incident is truly mortally heartbreaking, like every day it seems these days. Every day here in this unsprung nation of dumbed-down TV zombies without an inch of mercy or care for their fellow beings, it seems. Every day it seems. It's like something is missing in them. A conscience a soul, who knows? But one thing is true. It's not like life isn't hard enough as is, especially to live in a racist country, than to have to contend with such throwbacks. Damn them all for what they did. Time to trim the herd, huh? Yeah, I can't understand that attitude either. I wonder if these people wind up, people like these six white people in West Virginia, if the CIA or the NSA would have known about these people in advance, they could have been recruited and used to get confessions out of Arab speakers or Islamic people who get swept up in these actions that bring in sheep herders and cab drivers and newspaper sellers, and then they are told, you're a terrorist, and we're going to find out to what degree. You might as well talk now, or we'll let these white people from West Virginia on you. You want them on you? And then you hear a scream, or the Arabic equivalent of no, Jesus, don't do that. It's just unbelievable. You know, what is the difference between these six Caucasians in West Virginia who do look at their pictures? My God, they do look like right out of Central Casting in Hollywood for Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead, whatever the hell the movie was. They do. These are people in my race. It makes me want to just submerge, just disappear into a different gene pool. It's hideous. But what is the difference between those people and the people who work for the CIA who torture other people to get confessions or information? Somebody please tell me the difference. The latter group is more educated. Okay, how many of them come from Princeton? Isn't Princeton one of the favorite nests from which these people are plucked early on by the CIA? If they are white and well-educated and well-connected and come from established families, aren't they plucked to become members of the family? This particular family? I don't know. I don't mean to pick on Princeton. It just seems like so many of them come from that particular university. Maybe not. They're Yaleys? Okay, they're Yaleys. Do they ever pick anybody from Georgia State? Doesn't seem that way, does it? But what is the difference between torturing people in some little hellish hovel on Diego Garcia and torturing somebody in some hellish hovel in a shack in some little town in West Virginia? Somebody tell me the difference. Maybe there's a difference in motivation. But the end result, I mean, is it a qualitative difference? A quantitative difference? What is the difference? Isn't torture torture? Isn't rendering another human being, first of all, totally helpless and impotent, and then start to apply the most exquisite and debauched forms of pain and suffering to that other human being for what? Isn't that why we have laws against it? Isn't that why there are international treaties against it? Isn't that why there is a kind of a general understanding that, yes, we can blow each other up with nuclear bombs, but when it comes to O'Brien and Winston Smith, we can't go there. We just can't. You know, killing somebody is an act of murder. Blowing up a city and incinerating 165,000 people is a political act. Doesn't mean anything. Ron is lost in PA tonight. I'm lost in this radio show. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Don't know what I'm talking about. Is there a break coming? Oh, good. All right, I'll tell you what. Let's do this top of the hour break. That'll give me a chance to look at MSNBC. They're doing a special on San Quentin. And then we'll come back and do another hour of this madness. Stay with us. If you're on hold, we will get your phone call when we come back. All right? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. I'll be off Monday evening. Sam Cedar will sit in for me. I'll be back Tuesday. So have fun with Mr. Cedar. All right, let's go right back to your phone calls as promised. Amy is listening in Portland on KPOJ. Hey, Amy, welcome to the program.
Well, Mike, tonight's selection is a Cab Merlot blend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Merlot blend?
Cabernet Sauvignon.
And Merlot blend? I can't stand that.
Why? Oh, no.
I like, you know, I like one or the other, but...
You don't like them blended together?
I don't. I don't know why. I don't know. It's like a mixed marriage, you know, a man and a woman. No.
Yeah, those don't blend at all.
No, not
that. But I was hoping to be a little more theoretical tonight.
Okay, go ahead.
The wine. I was thinking this week that the listeners... of which I am one,
yeah.
Believe that we live in a constitutional representative democracy.
Now, that's the theory, but no, we don't anymore.
We don't, do we?
No. I think most people who stay politically aware understand that. I don't know when exactly we lost it, probably somewhere back around the time of Vietnam, and it's been just getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, don't you think that... Reagan probably put, you know, as he started to.
Yeah, Reagan was the one that greased the wheels. I think Lyndon Johnson either I think inadvertently, because I think Lyndon Johnson, even though he was a political thug, I think most people know that, and he was a less than inspiring president. Although he did do some good things, there's no question. But he also got us deeply into Vietnam,
right?
And based on lies, whether or not he knew they were lies, I guess is for historians, people smarter than me, to figure out. But it was during that time, you know, Lyndon Johnson spawned Nixon, and Nixon spawned Reagan, and Reagan spawned the Bush family, and it's so I note it back in the Johnson years, when we started to lose this as a constitutional representative government.
Yeah, I was thinking more Reagan, because when he
well, you're right. Reagan
started with I guess I should go back and look more. The air traffic controller strike, and when he broke up that union, that seemed to me to be the point where it was okay, and where greed was good.
Yeah,
and that whole imagery, and now, you know, I keep looking back, the militarization of the police. You know, the more and more stories about SWAT teams.
Right.
Going on calls. It's like, well, what happened to diplomacy? Oh, wait, George Bush won't talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He won't talk to the Iranian president. I'm not going to try and say his name. But he won't talk to him. I mean, he went to great lengths when they were both at the UN last year.
Mm-hmm.
He instructed the Secret Service to make sure he didn't run into the man.
Right.
Because he doesn't want to talk to anybody. He just wants to bomb them. And that's, you know, you said last night, this seems to be how we're governed. Whoever our leader is how is reflected in the rest of the.
That's right.
Of the
rest society,
of the
rest of society.
Rest of society.
Yeah, we start to adopt attitudes and actions that are similar on a smaller scale. I mean, you and I are not bombing or thinking about bombing another country. But we may be bombing people in our attitude. You know, people we come across in traffic or at a checkout line, or the whole country starts to get tense and nasty, and belligerent, and it comes from the top. You know, regardless of what people may think viscerally about Bill Clinton, I've said before, you know, I've got some real problems with the man. But stop and think what the '90s were like under Clinton's leadership. it was prosperity. Maybe half the prosperity was a result of illusion and smoke and mirrors. Let's set that aside for a second. There were no American soldiers died. We made sure a lot of other people died, but none of our people died. There was an attitude. Crime went down. Education access went up. There was some minuses, big minuses under Clinton, but there were also some big pluses. But the point I'm getting to, the overall feel of the country under Clinton, and maybe this is because most of us just don't pay attention to the atrocities that were going on, but the overall feel was much more positive and promising. That's the word I'm looking for, promising.
Well, and when there was an attack on us, when Oklahoma City bombing, he didn't say, oh, this is a I mean, it was a form of terrorism by any definition, but he didn't call out the military.
And when the trade tower when the trade tower, World Trade Center was bombed the first time, it was a police action, and they got the people who did it and tried them and convicted them. They didn't suspend their civil rights. They didn't say you can't have a lawyer. They didn't say no habeas corpus. They played by the rules and put the son of a bitches in jail. When the embassies were bombed in Africa, it was a police action. They tracked them down, tried them, and convicted them.
Right.
Every single act of terror that was perpetrated against us under Clinton was investigated as a crime, not as an act of war, and as a result, so many people who perpetrated those acts against us wound up in prison, where they'll be for the rest of their lives.
Right.
George Bush acts like a hop-headed meth freak, and a terrible event happens here, and he decides to declare war on possibly three different countries. The man is absolutely out of control. They need to take away his drugs, take away his nuclear bomb codes, and ice him down for a while. Let him calm down, and then send him to The Hague and put him on trial for war crimes.
I don't know if there's ever a way to get him to The Hague, but clearly he and Cheney and Rumsfeld all need to go.
If there were justice that applied to perpetrators, American perpetrators of hideous crimes, like Kissinger, like Cheney, like so many of these people, they'd be put in the dock and tried for crimes against humanity.
But he's destroyed the this might be interesting. He's destroyed the credibility of the United States of America to such a degree that no longer will fear him. I mean, fear the country and say you're just a bully, and you've committed war crimes, and you aren't going to get a pass on them, and you're going, if we can get him to The Hague, I'd personally put him on the plane and escort him there.
I hear that.
But I want to think about be afraid of somebody, something, brown people, terrorists, and every once in a while, poor old Osama bin Laden shows up. And nobody connects it. Bin Laden has been doing business with George Bush's family for 30 years.
Right.
And I keep thinking, it's got to be preposterous. The world is so bizarre now. I keep thinking, how can I think this? But could this be possible that this is all a set up deal with Bin Laden? How do these little tapes show up every once in a while?
I don't.
As some distraction. All of a sudden, he needs a distraction, and so it's like, what haven't we used? Oh, let's use the Bin Laden tape.
Yeah.
We haven't used that for a while.
Right. We've really got a good Bin Laden lookalike this time. We were getting a little shaky there, but we got a good one this time.
Yeah. Now, what kind of Grecian formula did he use in his beard? Because it's gone from being gray to darker. What happened there? Did somebody wasn't
they weren't
paying attention to the
to the details. I hear you, Amy. Listen, I got to leave it there, dear heart. We got to move on. Thank you so much. I appreciate you checking in. Wow, yeah. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening via the internet, and we'll get her call as soon as we come back. Stay there, Edie. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Something wrong with me. Out of all the hours thinking, somehow.
Nighty-night, truth seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We're just about to connect with Edie, who is calling in from Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Edie.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I was out of it today, so I didn't know about this horrible West Virginia story until I tuned into your show.
Yeah, well, it all came to light about actually about 10 days ago. I mean, this is I'm not surprised that you didn't know about it. I didn't know about it until about I saw it as a little item in the Times or someplace, and then it kind of dropped off the radar screen because of this other stuff. But when you get into that story and find out, oh my God, this really happened.
Oh, and your description of it was so descriptive, and I punched in, you know, WV torture, and there it was, the West Virginia torture family.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read the story, and I said, well, and I scrolled down, and there were those pictures, these things. The you're so right. They look like scraps of inbred DNA that, you know, these people could be in monster movies, and they wouldn't need the makeup.
Yeah.
Oh.
I got that feeling, too.
Yes, and I, you know, far be it for me to engage in lookism, but my God, if they match what they did to look at them, you can see, they did it.
I know, and you and I both should be ashamed for saying that, but I agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, well, I just wanted to, I don't know what I wanted to do. I really wanted to scream and puke and things like that.
I hear you.
Here in the belly of the red beast. Thank you so much, Mike. Have a great weekend.
All right, Edie. Take care.
Bye-bye.
From Lance in Manhattan, Illinois, regarding the West Virginia reality. That's what the subject line says. Hey, Mike, my extended family is from Coon Branch Holler. I'm not making that up, West Virginia. I am shocked this type of thing does not happen more often in that part of the world. The great majority of the people living in these third worldish parts of West Virginia are generationally uneducated, intolerant, ignorant Christians. Remember Christy England? She's one of them. These freaks are the end result of generations of utter despair and dire hopelessness. Thank you, coal industry, for enslaving and poisoning the poor people of West Virginia. When I go back home, I feel like I'm driving through a satanic circus cult as I weave through the corporate, polluted countryside and topless mountains of my diseased, victimized former home state. Better get used to it. Thanks to the fakeocrats and the scumlickens, Coon Branch is spreading. Yeah, that's the hard part. It is the hard part for me, regardless of what Edie and I were just talking about. The hard part for me is to not look at places like these hollows and mountain passes and little tucked away villages and in places like rural West Virginia or rural Georgia. So much of this is true in the South, where industrialization and that sort of thing just kind of blew right by before people had a chance to join the middle class. The mills closed and moved to some foreign country, and people that were left with, you know, either going into the mines to work or not much other choice. And it's difficult for me to not feel some kind of horrific sympathy. And that's very patronizing on my part. I know that. So I try to stay away from it. I try not to feel that way. But I've spent an awful lot of time in the rural South, in those little hollows and backwaters. I have. And usually when I'm in those, or when I used to go in those areas over the past 20, 30 years, I just kept my mouth shut. You know, I'm not an overly educated person by any means, but, I would stick out like a sore thumb. So I would just shut up, you know, when I was in those areas doing what I was doing at the time and just observe. But especially in North Carolina also, little towns where the mills, the textile mills used to be all over the place. And the people were paid nothing. The people were paid the equivalent in today's money $6 an hour, $5 an hour. Both husband and wife would work. They live in a company owned shotgun house and have three or four children, all of them breathing lint into their lungs, and the parents bringing it home to the kid for the kids to breathe. Breathe. Almost everybody up there I ever ran across in the business I was doing had pre-asthmatic conditions or lung conditions from breathing this stuff in. And finally, the mills just said, ah, screw you, and moved to Taiwan or China or Jordan and left these families high and dry with nothing, absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing. And if I could, forget all the children I saw in Appalachia over, 15, 20-year period when I was working in those areas, all the children who were just literally brain damaged from improper diet, from abuse, from I can't even talk about it now because it was so overwhelming, so sad, so powerfully, unbelievably sad to realize that I was in America. I was in the United States of America, and I had a job and a car and a tank full of gas and a credit card or two and some money in my pocket, and here I am among people who look exactly like me, who were going to eat lard and rice for dinner. And the children, you know, were, oh, Jesus. So I understand, Lance. Troublesome kind of.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, back to your calls. Satya is calling from Seattle, listening via the internet. Satya, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm calling about the Republican versus Democrat, about the difference between the two.
Uh-huh.
And it flashed me back to when I was 17 and was stupid enough to enlist in the Marines. I remember sitting in the recruiter's office filling out the form, and I got to the question, have you had sex with a person of the same gender?
That's and on the application to become a Marine?
It was when I was 17.
Wow.
And I was bisexual and smart enough to know that the correct answer, if you wanted to join, was no. So I marked no,
uh-huh.
even though it wasn't true. And then shortly after that is when Clinton was talking about gays in the military and ended up compromising to the right with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and
right.
all the witch hunts that resulted after that. And to me, it was just symbolic of all the ways that the Democrats keep progressing to the right in so many areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I flash forward to today, and I just think the way Pelosi keeps Bush's military spending on the table and takes impeachment off the table,
right.
it's analogous to progressives voting for corporate Democrats. We keep compromising and selling out to the right. And I think if you support non-corporate Democratic candidate Kucinich until the primary, I just wonder, should you cave and support the lesser of two evil corporate Democrat next November and continue this compromise to the right that we just keep giving away everything we stand for? When are we going to take the stand? And it seems the only way I can think of to do that is by voting for third and fourth party candidates. And by building a change, it's obvious that they won't win in the election, but if you think in the long term, that it might be a step toward eventual change.
Well, yeah. I've heard very strong arguments made in favor of abandoning both corporate parties and going for a third or fourth party candidate. And there's a lot of merit to that. That makes a lot of sense. the problem with it, and it's a problem of the real world, is that the way our system is set up here in the United States, our political system, it is to stick a knife between the ribs of any newly born political parties before they're removed from their mother's breast. In other words, third and fourth parties have very little chance in this country because of the way things are set up. This is what the corporate parties have made certain, that they're not going to be challenged. Therefore, since that is a reality, is there enough time to do all the work that has to be done to build a third party? Look how long the Greens have been around. Look how long, what's his name? Nader. God, I hate these senior moments. Ralph Nader has been around. And then take a look at how many Naderites have wound up on county commissions or in state legislatures or in governor's chairs or in the House of Representatives. That is the reality. Now, in saying that, I'm not by any means saying the people, you know, if someone were to ask me, that no one ever does, but, you know, I'm not saying that people shouldn't devote their energy to building a third party. The question now, though, for me, because I've toyed with the idea, too, the question becomes, is there enough time? A. B. How quickly will they murder that third party before we even get a chance? So as an alternative to that, what has always been suggested to me is to vote Democratic no matter what. And then once there is a solid, sustainable, ongoing, secure Democratic Party majority, then start culling the herd. You know, House members have to run every 2 years. So if we have a Democrat who is in office, who all of a sudden is, or not all of a sudden, but who is a corporate Democrat, and he or she is there because we put them there, then in the next election cycle, run someone in the primary against that corporate Democrat and try to pick them off one at a time. Now, that to me is a possible, workable solution to people who say, no, Malloy, you're crazy because the entire Democratic Party has become corrupted. I say to that, no, because I can still find you Democrats who are not corporate Democrats. Maybe
I'm fine with voting for someone with like Kucinich.
Right.
You know, but when it comes into the primary, if Hillary ends up winning it, are we going to continue to vote for Iraq? Are we going to ever turn back the tax cuts? Are we ever going to turn back the Patriot Act? Are we ever going to turn back NAFTA? I can't see that happening under her.
I can't
see
either.
It is another compromise to the right. And why spend our time and energy compromising to the right when we could be a part of the groundswell that eventually, maybe by the time your child gets to be an adult, maybe the work that we put into a third-party candidate becoming viable will have happened by the time, I don't know, is it a girl?
Yes.
Yeah, by the time she's an adult or for your mm-hmm. grandchildren.
Well, I understand that, and I don't disagree with that position. What I said at the beginning of this discussion is I wonder now if we have enough time, if our political system has enough time for voters who normally vote Democratic to abandon the Democratic Party and go to work for a third party, which in some instances will guarantee the continued ascendancy of the most right-wing party, which is the Republicans. It's a choice everybody has to make. I hear you. I'm not exactly sure how to answer. I don't know. At my age, I prefer the idea of electing Democrats and then picking them off through the primary process. I just don't know if we have enough time. But I hear you.
So you think you're going to support Hillary if she wins the primary?
No, I don't. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm hoping against hope that she doesn't win the primary. If she does, and becomes the candidate on the Democratic side, then I've got a dilemma, because I cannot vote for a right-winger like Hillary. I cannot vote for a religious fundamentalist like Hillary. Read the article about her in the current issue of Mother Jones. It's shocking when you find out she's a member of a Christian fundamentalist prayer cell in D.C. that includes people like Sam Brownback, who we talked about this evening, and former Senator Oh, who is the guy, the one that likes to embrace dead babies? Who was that, Kathy? I'm drawing a blank. You know, his wife miscarried, and they took the dead fetus home. Rick Santorum, they took the dead fetus home for the children to become familiar with. So, you know, Hillary is part of that group.
Yeah.
So, no, if she gets the Democratic Party nomination, there's a very good chance that for the first time since I've been old enough to vote, I will not be voting for a Democrat or
Nader
a Republican.
Nader says he'll run if she's elected.
Say it again?
Nader says he'll run if she wins the primary.
Well, okay. Then that would siphon off enough votes. Maybe, you know, who knows? Nader has all of a sudden become an old man. He's older than McCain. But wouldn't it be a shock if Nader were to take enough votes to win? There are an awful lot of disenchanted Republicans out there, I think, who've had enough, but who just can't vote for Hillary. So I don't know. It's going to be weird. I have a feeling that Hillary, though, is going to get the Democratic Party's nomination and will wind up as president of the United States. I feel that coming. I really do. Hey, listen, thanks for calling in, Satya. I've got to leave it there. I appreciate your call. Take care. Mary is calling from Memphis, listening on the Internet. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Sorry, that was the obligatory knee-jerk social grease.
Oh,
we know how we're doing.
We're doing hellishly.
Yes, okay. Regarding your last caller, shoot, go ahead and vote for Kucinich. Write him in if necessary, because if it doesn't work this time, fascism is so close that it doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
You know, that's probably the most realistic way for someone like me to look at that. What is there to lose at this point? That's true.
Not much. But anyway, I had called about our military and the deliberate killing off of our military so that it can be replaced with a privatized military.
Yep, that's the plan, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And part of this tasering and police brutality and Department of Transportation and airline security brutality is just to accustom Americans to getting ordered around by strangers in uniforms that have weapons.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
You mentioned a couple of programs back that our returning military may be the last refuge against fascism, because
yeah,
it's still among those who respect the Constitution instead of dictators and death profiteers.
Mm-hmm.
So, but everyone that is sent over to Iraq is under a death sentence.
That's
either
true.
It's bullets or mortars or roadside bombs. If that doesn't get them, then the depleted uranium radiation sickness does.
And if that doesn't get them when they get home, if they need medical care or help, they're just screwed to the wall. Absolutely. Mary, dear heart, I have to leave it there. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break.
I don't want to kill a man, another mother, son or daughter,
son or daughter.
George Bush's war is...
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the usual group. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, Catherine Bay, our executive producer, for putting together another one of these mad events called the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. Thanks a lot for your input, too. And again, I'll be off this Monday, but the good news is Sam Cedar will be guest hosting that evening. So... play nice. David in San Francisco writes in about Bush's Mandela comment. Mike, somebody should take Bush aside and let him know those other Mandelas are not Mandelas. They're his helpers. Oh, God. It must be cocktail time out in San Francisco. No, I know what you mean. Thanks. Back to your phone call. Steve is calling from Albany, New York, listening on the Internet. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks, hey. Mike, for taking my call.
Sure.
Sorry. I wanted to call in and maybe give a little bit of hope to tonight's call. You were talking about different peace actions earlier, and there's actually a peace action that's happening in Syracuse on September 29th that was instigated by active duty soldiers from Fort Drum. Fort Drum has had the largest number of casualties, and they have the first Iraq Veterans Against the War chapter with active duty soldiers. And they contacted the Syracuse Peace Council earlier this summer to help put together an event, which has grown into something that we have people coming from all across upstate New York and mm-hmm. Massachusetts and Connecticut. Jimmy Massey is coming up for it. Scott Ritter will be there.
Now, when is this, and is there a website where people could get information?
Yep. It's September 29th, and there's a few different websites. One of them is neighbors4peace.org.
Neighbors4peace.org.
Yep.
Okay.
And also peacecouncil.net is another one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very growing event, and we expect that it's probably going to be the most significant anti-war rally in upstate New York, or maybe even New York itself,
mm-hmm.
Since the war has started because of the active duty members that have started it. So
that's interesting. Now I know that they are not prohibited from participating in something like this, active duty members, but are they allowed to do it in uniform?
Not to my knowledge. They have come, actually, a couple of them came out to Albany for the Labor Day Solidarity Picnic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, talked about things there. And, they do have to be very careful about how they go about things, and some of them are not so willing to have their identities known, but some of them are quite outspoken. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I hope you will let us know. This is a week from Saturday.
Yes,
is that right?
Correct.
I hope you'll let us know how it develops, and in fact, next week, during the week, if you like, Steve, give us another call, and just as a reminder that this event is occurring, okay?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
All right, thanks, Steve. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. Alan is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Alan, welcome to the program.
Hello. I thought I'd give a little update, positive things. We called the other week about an impeachment coalition rally we had down here. We gathered over 200 people to hear David Swanson.
Uh-huh.
And we're having another gathering at a local bookstore, Books and Books, on Tuesday, because John Nichols is in town to push his book, The Genius of Impeachment. And we've arranged for a pre-talk reception with our coalition at the bookstore from 5 to 6. So something happened in there.
All right. Now, how do people attend that?
They can go to FloridaImpeach.org and get information.
Oh, okay.
And they can RSVP with us.
FloridaImpeach.org.
Okay,
good.
Well, I called mainly to say, in the remaining moments of the show, is that when I look around, we hear all these stories on radio, TV, the whole media thing, and the Congress, and they're talking about mm-hmm. Iran and Iraq and the taxes and what kind of health care. The number one problem facing America today is the arrival of a police state in America.
Sure.
And not a single soul elected by us is even mentioning this, and it doesn't appear in any of the corporate media. And so I think what we have to, impeachment is only actually a subset of that. So I think that we really got to be talking to people at this time. Is every chance you have to talk to a representative for something, say, what are you doing about the police state? Let's get these words out in the open. Folks, what are you doing about it? We don't want this here in America. What are you going to do about it? That's why I don't have, you know, this has been coming for years and years and years, and I haven't seen the Democrats step up to the plate on any of this stuff. So
yeah, that's
I'm not there anymore. I see it as like, you know, if you can imagine the world at the table, the flat worlders, you know, you go off the edge of the table, the Republicans and the neocons are pushing us right off the edge of the table, and the Democrats are holding hands and singing Kumbaya and going over the mountains and going off the same edge.
That's
and
true.
So what you have to do is you need a group of people to say, no, no, go the other way.
Yeah.
Turn around. Here's the direction we have to be going. That's why I put some of my energy in trying to build a third alternative party. And we have to make it known. Because you said, well, you know, I don't know if we have time to do that. Well, you know what? If we're still moving toward that edge, every day we move to that edge isn't going to help us turn the other direction.
That's true. That's very true. Alan, thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. We're flat out of time, pal. Y'all have a good weekend. I'll see you next week, Tuesday night. Don't forget Sam Cedar Monday night. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.